Welcome to the Radio Bible Course in our study of John chapter 11. We have read the first section of the story of Lazarus, the man who died. That took us up to verse 16 of chapter 11 in the Gospel of John. The news had come to Jesus that Lazarus was sick, and in the meantime, Lazarus had died. Jesus was a good distance away when the news came to him. Well, we pick up with verse 17, but let me just bring you up to date on a couple of things. Jesus had said in verse 14, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe." He was talking to his apostles. They were with him. It sounds like a cruel thing to say. Lazarus is over there in Bethany, a couple of miles away from Jerusalem, and Jesus got the news that Lazarus was sick, but he said he's glad he wasn't there so that he could die. But he did that, he said that, so that they would be convinced that when a man is really dead, not just in a coma, that they would believe when they saw what would happen. So implied, of course, is that the apostles have a long way to go in their faith, and he is going to teach them faith by the great miracle of raising up a man who had been in the grave 4 days. Let me say that if you as a Christian have bemoaned the fact that you don't have strong faith, keep in mind that the apostles did not have strong faith either. But fortunately, we have more truth than they did. We have a record in the New Testament of all that happened. They didn't have a New Testament. They had the presence of Jesus, and they heard his words. But now we have the entire historical record, and we have it in a way that is easier for us to believe because we see the whole picture, which they did not see. Remember how shook up they were when Jesus was crucified? It's as though their balloon had been broken. All their hopes had burst and vanished. But now let's move on to verse 16 here. Thomas, called the twin, and in Aramaic his name is Thomas, and in Greek his name is Didymus, which means twin, he said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." Die? With whom? Well, at a superficial reading, you would assume that he was talking about Lazarus. Lazarus had died, and he seems to be saying, "Let's go to Bethany and die with him." That's not what it means. What is the situation here? Jesus had said, "Let's go to Judea." And they as much as said, "What? Just recently, they wanted to stone you to death in Judea, and you want to go back there?" Right back into that barrage of stones? Thomas had that in his mind. Let's go with Jesus and die with him and be stoned to death with him. Now that's what his expression seems to say, and that indicates a real faith. He's willing to die for his Christ. Now Thomas is best known for what? For doubting. Everyone seems to know about doubting Thomas. That comes from the account in John chapter 20. When he didn't believe the testimony of the other apostles that they had seen Jesus who had risen from the dead, he didn't doubt the Lord as much as he doubted their testimony. But Thomas was a very devoted disciple, and he reveals it here when he says, "Let's go and die with him," referring to Jesus, who they felt would be stoned to death. Thomas was ready to die with his Lord. Now in verse 17, it says, "Now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary sat in the house. Martha said to Jesus, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And even now I know whatever you ask of God, God will give you.' Jesus said to her, 'Your brother will rise again.'" Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. This section concerns the arrival of Jesus and his disciples in Bethany. It's the first part of this story, and this one deals with his conversation with only one of the sisters, Martha. Now, John gives us the story of Jesus' arrival in two sections, and the first gives us the most important teachings from our Lord. Lazarus was clearly dead, according to verse 17, not unconscious. His body had been wrapped as the custom was, and when they wrapped the body, it must have been cold. That is, the body was cold. If it were not cold, they wouldn't have wrapped it. Instead, they would have tried to revive him. But Lazarus was truly dead, and so they had buried him. Now, in verse 18, we have a parenthetical statement from the Apostle John, and again he reveals what a good reporter he is by giving us the exact distance. He tells us that Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles. When Jesus was at Cana of Galilee, in chapter 2 of this gospel, John told us how many jars there were which were filled with water and which were turned into wine. In other places in the gospel of John, he tells us how far the boat was from the shore. He tells us about how many fish were caught. He gives us all the details. We can have confidence in John. And when he talks about eternal things, because he has established himself as an accurate reporter, you can trust in the accuracy of his statements concerning life eternal, life after death, forgiveness, and such things. He is a credible witness, and that's so important. We often listen to people tell us things, but we don't know whether they have it straight. We don't mean to doubt people, but you know how people are. Experiments have been conducted with people in the classroom, watching and hearing what was going on, and then afterward being asked to relate what they saw and what they heard. The result is you get all kinds of answers. Now, we don't listen and watch carefully, but John did. He had it straight. Furthermore, he was inspired by the Spirit. Keep in mind that it wasn't the good memory of John that gives us an accurate account of the life of Jesus. Matthew, Mark, and Luke did not have to have good memories either, for Jesus promised when the Spirit came, he would remind them of everything that he had told them, and that the Spirit would come and guide them into all truth. That's how we got the Bible. It was a promise of Jesus Christ, and we all have to decide whether we can believe Jesus in that matter or not. Now, verse 19 speaks of the common practice of the Jews. Whoever knew the family well came to mourn when someone died. And the text tells us that many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. The mourning lasted 30 days, with the first 3 days being a concentrated mourning. It was loud. It was wailing. Mary and Martha would have been comforted by mourners, and they would have been quoting passages such as we find in the Old Testament. And these, by the way, are still practiced by the Jews today at funerals. Psalm 112, verse 6, For the righteous will never be moved. He will be remembered forever. That's certainly comforting when a loved one has been taken away. And then there's Proverbs 10, verse 7. The memory of the righteous is a blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot. And Isaiah had something to say about this, chapter 57, verse 2. He enters into peace. They rest in their beds who walk in their uprightness. The rabbinical writings tell us that the dead should be thought of as living, not dead, for they know about us and they surround our presence. The rabbis taught because of this that you should never mention a dead person without adding a blessing to his memory. That's still a practice among many Jews today. Common custom required the family at a funeral to hire professional mourners as well as those who came voluntarily. And not only mourners, but minstrels. There were flute players who came. Now, you may be critical of some people and the wakes that they conduct in our society today, but this becomes part of the culture of people, and Jesus didn't correct anybody for the culture practices that they have, and he didn't try to teach them that that's not the way a funeral ought to be conducted. He let people do what they wanted to do. That wasn't important to him. When we face a situation like he did, we ought to comfort as we can, because we are all victims of tradition and culture. There's really nothing wrong with those practices, except when it contradicts what God has clearly taught. So at this funeral, there were professional mourners. And the wailing consisted of chanting or singing hymns and prayers in alternate parts, like we sometimes do when we go to church and read responsive readings. These are called antiphons. We learn from another place in the Bible that there were indeed such people who were professional mourners, but they were not truly grieved over the death of the person who had died. That's illustrated in the story of Jairus. Jesus raised that synagogue official's daughter. It's in Mark chapter 5, verse 38. It reveals something. It says, "And they came to the house of the synagogue official, and he beheld a commotion, and people loudly weeping and wailing and entering in. He said to them, 'Why make a commotion and weep? The child has not died, but is asleep.'" Well, but the child was dead, and it says, "And they began laughing at him." Now, the question is, can you be mourning 1 minute and the next minute laughing? Only if you are a professional mourner, because you can turn it off and you can turn it on. So this, in a way, reveals what was going on in those days at funerals. And we see the sudden change from tears and wailing to laughter. That indicates how artificial the funeral customs had become. We are out of time, so we'll have to conclude this study Monday. I hope you'll join me. In closing, I want to say this. If you are trying to get to heaven, you may not understand the word grace. Salvation, God has declared, is for those who will stop trying to save themselves and instead accept God's grace gift. We have a free booklet that will help you with this critical matter. We invite you to write for it. Ask for the free grace booklet. Until next week, this is Nick Kalavoda reminding you that the word gospel means good news.
Our address is Radio Bible Courses, Post Office Box 14916, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 70898. The website is rbcword.org.